Welcome back. This is What the Buck. I am Old School, your host. B. Shucker says it's been too long. I don't disagree, man. You guys know, though, here's one of the many challenges that I have. And listen, they're countless. My wife tells me all the time where I fall short. That's not true. She doesn't ever ask me that much. But off-season just sucks, right? And I know they say there's no off-season in the NFL anymore. And for the players, to be honest, really there isn't. This is a year-round game for them. It's not like they stop playing football and then go grab a hammer and start working construction like back in the old days. But for me, and a lot of fans are not the same as I am, and that's fine. It takes fans of all styles and types to make the world go round. I don't get into the off-season stuff that much. So for me, this is like Christmas, right? And for those of you who've been with me for a while, you know, as soon as we get to the point where I'm waiting for my media credential stuff to come through from the Bucks, which, by the way, kudos to the Buccaneers PR staff, fully credentialed again this year. Really appreciate that love. You know, those credentials coming through really let me know that football season is here, and that's got me totally ecstatic and juiced and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. We've got an action-packed show for you tonight. We actually have two guests. We have a surprise for you. We pimped out all week that we got Pat Donovan calling in at 9:15 from WDAE, the Pat and Aaron Show, a longtime friend. We'll be talking to Pat for a little while on the show. And then as a surprise guest, we didn't know we were going to be able to have the second person in here. Our regular guest, Mark Cook of PewterReport.com, editor-in-chief, will be calling in at 9:35 as well. And we'll probably end up going until, I guess, about 10:30, given that, because with those two guests in there, I actually have some stuff I'd like to talk about as well. So we'll go organically. You know how we do on this podcast. We'll talk until there's nothing to talk about. So I want to thank you guys for joining us on the show. I've got a couple of other announcements that are about sort of the What the Buck universe, as it were, that I want to get out there that we have not made announcements about yet. They will be posted on the website as well so that you guys know what's going on. You know, if you've been with us for a while, that What the Buck is more than just a podcast. It's a community organization in our 501c3. What the Buck really matters. Does a lot of activities here in the community. We'll talk about that for a second. But one of the things many people get their first introduction to us by is our tailgate. We have the only Hall of Fame tailgate in Tampa Bay. I don't know if it's the largest tailgate in Tampa Bay, and I've been told by others not to worry so much about size. And I try and listen to people when they tell me things like that, but it's a pretty damn spectacular tailgate. In fact, I've heard it described more of a destination, and it's really kind of humbling to hear that when people talk about their vacation planning, saying, hey, listen, well, you know, we're coming down for this game and this game because we want to make sure we tailgate for these events. And that's really a privilege to be able to do that, to provide that game day experience. It's one of the things that we hold very dear here at What the Buck, which is it's not just about us and the Buccaneers, right? That's where our heart is. Right, that's where our spirit is. That's who we cheer for. But we also create a great game day experience for other fans because we travel a lot and we like to have a great game day experience when they go. So being able to talk to our Viking fan friends who came down here and said it was the best tailgate they've ever been to, our Raider fan friends, like all those guys, that kind of spirit of camaraderie where we get together, we drink, we have a good time, we talk shit to one another for a while, go to the game, one of our team wins, we come back, the one who wins gets to talk more shit, and then we go to the next game. That is what we're all about. Every year, we have a planning meeting to determine whether we're going to keep doing What the Buck. It's a lot of work, guys. You guys know that. It's a lot of work to do the podcast, do the website, do the tailgate, do the charitable work. We have to reassess every year. And this year, we have reassessed that we are going to continue with all fronts. We're going to streamline some things on the tailgate, but it's coming back full force, and there's some really big announcements. Our new platinum sponsor is Steps Towing. Now, if you're not a local person out here, you don't know who they are, but Steps Towing has stepped up. Pardon the pun. And they are going to be our platinum sponsor for the tailgate, providing monetary kickoff for us and allowing us to do the things that we do. A monster towing agency here and transportation agency in the West Central Florida area. We thank them for what they're doing and helping us do the things we do, giving us the degrees of freedom that we need to get those things done. I'd like to also send a huge shout out to Pepin Distribution. You guys know Bud Light was the beer of our tailgate last year. We raised one to right now, and we're going to do it again this year. Pepin Distribution is back in, full-fledged as a gold sponsor. Tito's Vodka is also back as a gold sponsor. So the tailgate is shaping up nicely. I also expect Steakhouse Elite. I haven't talked to the guys out there because we've been so busy. But those guys, we might as well be married at this point. We love them. They love us. I can't imagine them not coming back. So we still have other sponsorships available if you'd like to help sponsor the tailgate, get some great press around that, and more importantly, be part of a tailgate that not only is, we think, the best pregame experience going, bar none, not just in Tampa, but bar none, but also realize that the net proceeds. Now, none of us get paid to do this. We don't take any pay to do the work that we do. We pay for our costs, and then the rest goes to name charities via our charitable foundation. Last year, we averaged over $1,000 a tailgate that went to a charity. So it's not only a great time, but it's great fun. So there's the big announcement on the tailgate. One other announcement about the charitable front, and then we'll get some intros going, and then Pat Donovan should be calling in at about 9:15, and we'll be talking Bucks, and I'll also talk about the Warren Sapp interview briefly. The school supply drive. You guys know that we do the school supply drive every year. Typically, we've done a kickoff party because we were late making our decisions about whether or not we're going to move forward with tailgating and all those sorts of things, because we have to make those calls. We were not able to execute on a pre-season kickoff party. It's a lot of work to do, to be honest, guys, and we just weren't able to get it done. That's normally where we would collect our school supplies. We went over, did some volunteer work with the amazing folks at the Bartolo Foundation, worked with 1,100 teachers who came in from all over the county. We were going to go ahead and continue our school supply drive. We put up a donation drive, and you guys have been absolutely ludicrous. We've generated almost $4,000 in 3 days. Our target was $6,000 to fill 600 backpacks on an average of $10 a backpack. We actually have over 800 backpacks, so our stretch goal is $8,000. All of these are going to be assembled on Sunday at the West End of Tampa, thanks to Steps Towing. Bartow Ford just gave us a vehicle to drive these things around. You know, Tito's Vodka, all these guys that are out there doing the things that they do, making it work for us, and making it work for these kids in the Tampa Bay area. If you'd like to donate, those links are always available on our website, on the Twitter feed. We've been kind of pimping them everywhere. I'll drop it here in the chat room as well. If you have some money and you want to donate, that'd be great. If you want to share it on your social media, that'd be great. If you run a business, that would be great. We understand everyone gets hit up all the time, but we're really kind of busting our ass to make that happen. It's a lot of moving parts, guys, and sometime those stories will come out, and I'll let you know about them. So that's all of the big sort of news announcements, structure announcements, charity announcements. We've had over 70 people donate to that campaign. Like I said, actually 71 now, and almost over $4,000. So it's really, really huge for us. All right. Articles, authorings, partnership, and our ecosystem. We are doing an intro series with our writers. John Hinkles came out today. You know Deez Bucks. He's been writing his ass off this season and doing a hell of a job, I think. In fact, I'm going to talk a little bit about his NFC South preview article. And do some sort of, not really compare contrast to Kevin Patras from NFC or from NFL.com. But Hinkle did his article. Great. He's been doing that. You'll learn a little bit about John. You're going to learn a little bit about these writers, who they are, what makes them tick. Tomorrow morning, JC De La Torres will come out, and I expect the others to trickle out over the next week. Those writers are going to be doing a lot more work this season. We're looking forward to that, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it as well. If you do, please do share it. And participate with it. Interact with them on those articles that links across to Facebook and can start really good conversations as well. I've already mentioned Pat Donovan of WDE, the Pat and Aaron Show, will be on at about 9:15 calling in. We also will have Mark Cook of PewterReport.com calling in about 9:35. The Warren Sapp interviews. Listen, there were a couple of Warren Sapp videos put out this weekend. They were phenomenal. I love Warren Sapp. I love his attitude. I love his honesty. I'm not going to say a damn thing about anything off the field because I don't really know a lot about it, to be honest, and I don't care. Spen is headed home now. She was staying at work late for the deliveries for some of the school supplies that were coming in from Amazon. She had to wait till late for FedEx to drop off the last cases of items, and then she has to get home. So I suspect she'll tune in a little bit later. Animals, good to see you out there. If you met John Hinkle, you would know, sir, he is a giant man. Dressed like a jester of sorts with a giant skull face. He talks a little bit about his persona in his article, but you would definitely remember Deez Bucks if you met him, Chris, but you probably did. He was there for sure. And he's in the chat room. There you go. My man Deez Bucks is in the chat room, so I'm sure he'll tell you all about that. All right, so the Sapp interviews were great. His passion was great. That leadership, that drive, it's funny because we've been trickling out or seeing all these videos trickle out from time to time with Gerald McCoy firing up the defensive line or Jameis firing up the team in the pregame or the postgame talk and all these sorts of things and the questions about leadership. Who is going to emerge beyond the guys we already know? Now, Quan Alexander has been bubbling all offseason, right? Whether it's just general conversations on Twitter, the extra work he's putting in to get into shape, the tattoo, the passion. Quan has rapidly ascended to become a fan favorite. Not that he was ever not a fan, what's less than favorite? Not that people ever didn't like him. People love what Quan did on the field, but he catapulted in many ways. Levante David was the darling, and he still is. This is not, to raise one, you don't have to denigrate another or reduce another. But Quan Alexander has really stepped his game up. And I think that there's a lot of excitement around Quan. I'm going to ask Pat about Quan when he calls in at 9:15, because with Quan excelling and doing the things he does really well better, it allows Levante to continue to escalate his game. Now, of course, we worry about who the third linebacker is going to be and all these sorts of things. But when you look at the playmakers, and Kevin Potter in his article on NFL.com talks about it, there are playmakers on all three levels of defense right now. And it's getting better. It's getting more formidable. The Mike Smith defense is getting more formidable. So we're going to be talking a lot about that when we get into the core show, about who we're looking at on defense, who we're looking at on offense, what we can expect, et cetera. But to buffer some of this time before Pat calls in at 9:15, training camp is coming up. I want to tell you guys where I'm going to be. I'm actually got a family trip next week to D.C. I won't be back for the first 2 days of training camp, which sucks because I'm not going to Canton this year because I wanted to make sure I got to more camp dates. That said, we're driving back the 29th, so I will be at training camp the 30th, and I believe every training camp after that. So if you come out to training camp, I know that the stick carriers have a takeover training camp thing going, I think, August 5th. So I expect to see a huge crowd on August 5th. I'm excited about people being excited about Buccaneer football. I don't give a shit what hashtag you roll with. I don't care. If you're a good fan, man, we can roll. And that just goes across the boards. You know, we love the Buckaholics. We love the stick carriers you're doing in the takeover thing. Let's get out there and be passionate about football. Now, I will throw a little word of caution. It's always easy to be pumped up before bad shit happens, right? So what I want to throw out there is a hope that if bad shit does happen, and God knows none of us want it to happen, but if things go south, I hope everyone stays in, like my man Art says over there, AO Train of Buckaholics, that we all stay together, one family, or like Spen always says, one family, right? Because listen, we've been rolling with the Buck for 12 years through the pile of shit that was the Buccaneers for the better part of a decade. Our tailgates are undefeated, right? People can talk shit about our fan base all they want. And some of it's true, guys. Let's not pretend that this shit isn't true, right? But I'll roll with the 30,000 that I roll with all day against the fans in Green Bay, against the fans in Pittsburgh, right? I'm not worried about that. Now, we get the new guys in here, and we teach them how to be fans too, and everything will be better, and that'll be great. Now, D's Bucks did put his article out there. We'll be talking about your article tonight, John, because I think you did a hell of a job. And it's interesting because when I read the NFL.com article about a similar topic, it wasn't that they came to different conclusions. You know what I mean? Animal, we have a tailgate for every home game. Every home game. We're out there. Even the evening games, which are a pain in the ass, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. Those games absolutely almost kill your soul every freaking year because, you know, as tailgaters, we are not particularly well equipped for schedule changes. So we just say things like, oh, well, we'll just start at the same time, you know. So even though it's going to start at 8:00 at night, we're too damn stupid to say, okay, well, we'll start the tailgate later. But you know what? We haven't died yet. But did you die? No, we haven't died yet. So we tailgate for every home game, and everyone's welcome. For those of you who don't know, who are just tuning into the podcast, our tailgates are donation-driven. There are no tickets sold. You donate, we have recommended minimum donations, but you can donate as much or as little as you want to, whatever you see the value of the charity and the work that you get there. We do have food, we do have drinks, we have entertainment, and it's a hell of a good time. A lot of the super fans are out there and a lot of great camaraderie. We've got people who we like to call it a family reunion for family you haven't met yet. So that's what we're going to be doing. But what I was talking about here on training camp, if you come out there, let us know, right? We're certainly on social media. It's not like I'm hard to spot. I'm giant. So I'm easy to spot. I usually end up going and sitting at about the 30-yard line, top of the stands, to watch during practice if I'm not walking down around the corner to watch the defensive line or the offensive line behind the stands. Now, I don't know how layout's going to be this year because that indoor facility has come along really well. I forgot who texted that. It might have been Joe Bucks fan. Tweeted out about how the shell had come up so fast because they had broken ground and they were making headway. But it's a massive complex they're building. It really is. It's a non-trivial structure that they're putting up. And I went up there the other day to pick up some things from One Buck Place, and it was surprising how significant the progress was. So I do suspect this year at training camp, for those of you who've been there before, things will be a little bit different. I suspect they're going to control entry and exit a little bit more closely with HBO being there. What I have heard is that it's not going to be a significant change to the style and approach. And they seem to be very open with the tickets. I had no issue on my normal tickets, which I have. Fortunately for me, I've got the credentials as well. But if you have never been to training camp, this is where I unabashedly pimp the hell out of training camp. To me, as a fan, and I know that there are those who argue against it, I think that training camp is one of the most exciting things that you can do because you get the most access. Let's see if this is my man, Pat. Good evening. Is this Mr. Pat Donovan?
You know it is, my man. How are you?
The dulcet tones of Pat Donovan. Man, you got that voice, brother. I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in tonight. I appreciate you taking time out of your family to spend some time with us on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem, man. Glad to do it.
All right.
See you again, for sure.
All right. Well, we've been talking about it for a while, and I still got to drag your ass out here to my house and cook for you because I know you like food. That's not a slam on on your physique because you're actually getting cut up. You're probably doing your DDP yoga again, for all I know. But I am in love with my smoker, and I know that you like barbecue, and I'd like to get another person's opinion on my meat, as it were. So
I would love to give my opinion.
All right, man. Well, I know we got a short time with you tonight, so I want to be respectful of that. You're an unabashed Jameis guy. You have been from early. You know, the Believe in Jameis movement, you got it into a damn video game. What do you expect to see out of your guy Jameis this year? You know, what are you excited about, and what are you sort of nervous about out of Jameis?
I mean, I guess if I'm nervous at all, and I don't think I am, it's just, you know, I think he continues to turn the football over. I think it's kind of always going to be part of his DNA. I actually got into a conversation with somebody earlier where I compared him, in my opinion, he reminds me a lot of Brett Favre and Eli Manning. And that's to say that Jameis, like those two guys, I think sometimes he looks like the best quarterback in football, and other times he leaves you going, what the hell are you doing? Because he looks like the worst quarterback in football. But like those other two guys, he's a kid that comes up in the clutch, and at the end of a football game, if it's coming down to it, you want him under center. And I think that's why he reminds me of those two guys. And that's why I think, like I said, I think turnovers are always going to be part of his DNA. I don't think he's ever going to be the best quarterback in football when it comes to touchdown interception ratio. But again, I think he's a kid that you're always going to be glad is under center for your team.
You know, it's funny. You just compared really bookend quarterbacks in my mind, sort of anecdotally. Brett Favre, the passionate, you know, emotions on his sleeve, running all over, jumping crazy. And then Eli, who's sort of the antithesis to that. But you're right. There's a strong similarity to their game. When the pressure's on, it sounds like it's a replacements quote, one of my favorite sports movies, right? They want the ball in their hand, right? That's what it comes down to. Jameis always wants the ball in his hand. He thinks he can make it happen.
Yep.
So, training camp's coming up. It's like Christmas for me. You and I get a chance to hang out at training camp, which is a lot of fun. What storylines are you interested in, most interested in? What are you looking for? I know you'll have your fancy camera out there getting some great shots for the website, but what is it that you're coming in this training camp going, I want to take a look at this?
Yeah, I'll be doing daily updates on the station this year for the first time as well.
Nice. So
that'll be a good thing. But I'll definitely be getting out there, getting some shots. I think, you know, kind of watching the offensive line once we get into that portion of training camp where there's actually a little bit of contact, because
right.
I know there's a lot of question marks about this offensive line, but I've just got this hunch, and we've talked a little bit about this, Aaron and I have. I just have this hunch that by week four, we're talking about how impressive this offensive line is, because I think with moving Ali Marpet inside to center and bringing in J.R. Sweezy, who every guy on the offensive line is just talking about how mean and physical he is, I think the offensive line gets bigger, meaner, stronger, and they're better running the football because of it, regardless of who's in the backfield. And I'll tell you what, you know this, Jarquizz Rodgers is a guy that came into camp when it comes to OTAs and mini camps and stuff in better shape than he was last year. And it's just something that I think, regardless of who's back there, I think the offensive line is going to look very good because, Derek, you know this, it's going to be tough, man, to put eight in the box against this football team because
they've
just got too many weapons.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did a quick video last week, I think, about the offensive line because people are still, especially non-locals, are still bashing the Bucs for not improving or increasing their focus on the offensive line. And I brought up, they tried with Sweezy, he was injured. Now, if we assume he's healthy, which we've been told he is and we have to believe is true, that's a hell of an upgrade. You get another year for Marpet and move him to center, and we've upgraded one of the five players on the line, which is a 20% improvement, even if you assume it's just one player improvement, right? Another year for Donovan Smith. It's crazy what this line can be. And then you brought up the magic piece, which is now you've got DeSean Jackson who can take the top off. All of a sudden, you cannot collapse on defense. You've got to play honest. And it's a great point, man. It's a great point. Training camp for me is one of those things where we get a chance to hang out. Like a lot of times the real media guys hang out with the not real media guys. We get to talk about football. We get to see a little bit behind the scenes on the players. What's your favorite training camp memory, either now or from the old days? I mean, because I know you've been doing this for a long time. I've known you back from the TLS days, the whole nine yards. So what's your favorite training camp memory that you could tell some fans about?
Man, you know what? I'm a little bit at a loss. I guess just, you know what? Something one of my coworkers told me last year, that's Jay Retchers. You know, like you said, I'm always walking around with my camera taking pictures and stuff. And I'm just kind of like, just the joy of football, just watching everybody, you know, in the stands, how excited they are to see football back. And just me, like, I'm such a football nerd that Jay said, one of the guys from the Bucs PR, he never told me who it was, but one of the guys from the Bucs PR just looked at him and was like, dude, look at Pat Donovan over there. Like, look at how happy that guy is. Like, he's just walking around with this bleep-eating grin on his face. I'm like, just look at him. Like, he's so happy just to be out here for football. And it's true. Like, just to be out there, to watch the guys work every day, to see how hard they work. And, I mean, I've been out there for a couple of years, but this is the first time since I've been covering this football team that there's this kind of energy for the team. And you know what? For good reason, man. They've done a good job. Jason White's done a good job. And I remember being out at the last camp, the mandatory mini camp, and I was watching DeSean Jackson walking back with Mike Evans, and they were walking by Brent Grimes, and they were walking by Lavonte David. And I just thought about how many positions on the field are filled right now by really talented football players and how different that is from a handful of years ago. And that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, man.
No, that's a great point. And that actually leads nicely into my next question for Pat Donovan here on the show from WDAE, the Pat and Aaron Show. How would you compare contrast? Because there is a palpable difference, right? And every year we do this. We're like, okay, well, do we get better? Where do we get better? Have you been able to pick up on that? Because I know you have a chance to be around the guys a lot more than I do with what you do. What would be the biggest thing you've seen? Have you noticed a difference in camaraderie, competition, depth? What's that big thing that's underlying that you could convey to fans who aren't here in Tampa or certainly not at One Buck Place?
It's kind of all of it. It's kind of all of it. But there's something that's happening with the nucleus of this football team. And what I think is unique here, and it certainly might still take a couple of years to play out to be, watch this team become great, right? But what I think is unique here, and I remember talking to Logan Mankins about this before he retired, is so many, if you think about so many good football teams, when they have that nucleus, that leadership group, it's usually a bunch of veteran guys. It's usually guys who have been in the league for a long time. This team, you know, with the drafting in 1 year of Jameis Winston and Donovan Smith, and on the other side of the field, Quan Alexander, this is a team that not only has a good nucleus with a good leadership group, but it's a young leadership group. And so there's just this kind of vibe in the locker room. And I'll tell you what, these guys are hungry. You know, I look at you see Quan Alexander on Twitter and it's like, he's just foaming at the freaking mouth to get back to football. Like, he wants to be great. I feel like as bad as Jameis wants to be great. You've got one of those guys on both sides of the field, and just the whole dynamic of the locker room is different. And it starts with Jameis. It really does. I mean, you know it, you've been around him enough. He's a special leader. He really is. And guys gravitate to that. And, you know, it's another thing I talked to Logan Mankins about before he retired. I mean, he's a guy that, you remember the game in Atlanta, the post-game speech that Jameis gave after that.
Yep.
If you watch the tape, Logan Mankins looks like he's in awe. And I spoke to him about that, because here's a guy that shared a locker room with Tom Brady. And he's in awe of this 22-year-old kid. It starts with Jameis, and there's a special thing going on in that locker room. And that's the big difference, you know, from even the last time they were in the playoffs. I was in that locker room. Believe me, it didn't feel like this.
Yeah, and you know, that's what's interesting. And I think by Jameis's leadership, not only is his leadership so critical, but he enables others to lead. Like, he enables a Quan Alexander to step up. And there's been a, you know, a lot of people have been busting Gerald McCoy's ass for this, that, and the other. Gerald's always been a leader. He's never going to be Warren Sapp. That's not who he is. But if you watch, you've seen the team demand of him, and he stepped up and continued to find it. But the guy like a Quan Alexander, who I think last year was called, you know, the Jameis of the defense, coming in early, watching film, making you, and I've not crafted, Pat, how to say this without sounding like I'm being an asshole to David, because I'm not. He's almost made people forget about Lavonte David, who's a rock star linebacker, right, and getting better. But you think Quan Alexander, you think this guy is going to change the way the defense plays this year. You know, it seems almost certain that that's going to be true.
No, I think you're 100% right. And listen, I love Lavonte David, man. He's a great kid, and he's a great linebacker, like you said. I just think there's a different level of passion for Quan Alexander. And kind of like you'd say about Jameis Winston, you know, I've met very few athletes in my life that compare to Jameis Winston when it comes to just the energy and passion for the game of football. And I think that, or any game, you know, I've been in the Rays clubhouse, but, you know, I've been in the Lightning locker room. Mm-hmm. Like, there are very few, I'm not just talking about football,
sure,
very few athletes I've been around that have this kind of energy about them that Jameis Winston does. And I see something similar to that from Quan Alexander. I think Lavonte David wants it about as much as anybody in that locker room, even though he's a quiet guy and won't really vocalize that well. But Quan Alexander is just, he's obsessed. He's obsessed with football. He's obsessed with being great. And I think that's why we're going to see that happen for him, because he's a kid that 2 years ago was just flying all over the place with no idea what the hell he was doing. And then last year, like everyone, he was figuring out this Mike Smith defense. And you saw the difference between what this team looked like in the second half and what they looked like in the first half of the season defensively. And, you know, of course, part of that is Quan Alexander. Now with the whole offseason, as hard as he's continued to work, as badly as he wants it, I think Quan Alexander is a kid that's just going to have a monster year.
It is scary what I think the defense could do. And, you know, Sapp had a couple of video snips that went out from this weekend, and he's working with some of the big guys, talking about how the defense could be as good as the defense he was on, which is high praise from Warren. Now, he's an unabashed Bucks fan, so he's going to say good things typically, but Sapp also doesn't pull punches.
Not ready to go there, though.
Well, you can't go there until they go hold people to 13 points a game average, right? Until they dominate teams the way that defense was capable of doing. And some of that comes with permanence and the ability to keep Mike Smith here, which was the huge fear, was Mike Smith was going to go get a head coaching job. I'm hoping that continues, because I'll tell you what, we got a couple of good guys, you know, in this clubhouse that are leading the team. Now, Pat, you guys out here in the chat room, you got Pat Donovan here from WDAE. Tell the folks out there, I know you got the Pat and Aaron show. Tell them when they can catch you on 620. Tell them what you can, where they can find you on the website. And with these updates you're doing, the daily updates, are those the quick updates you're doing, or are you doing the longer updates from camp on the WDAE set there?
No, yeah, I'll be doing actually on the phone with Ron and JP every
Great.
Day at 2:30. I'm calling into their show with a daily update. About 12 minutes or so, I'll be on the air with them every day, kind of just talking about what happened at camp. Pat and Aaron show is every Saturday from 8 to noon, typically, unless it gets bounced around sometimes.
Sure.
College football starting and stuff, you know, Gators will move the show a little earlier or whatever, but typically 8 to noon. Matter of fact, this Saturday, if you're in the Newport Richey area, we'll be at Moss Nissan from 8 to noon. Because the Pat Aaron show is presented by Moss Nissan, cheap plug.
No, that's a great plug, and I know you love your Nissan.
I do. And Pat Donovan, WDAE, on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, Pat, listen, man, get back to the family. Go have a good time. Someday get over here and experience my smoked food, and I can't wait to see you out of training camp.
All right, man, I look forward to seeing you.
All right, man, take care. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Pat Donovan of WDAE. Actually, I'm very fortunate that I've known Pat for a long time. You know, you guys in the chat room made fun of me for saying not real media. I kind of tongue-in-cheek point out the fringe media thing. You know, Chris Fisher from Bucks Brief and I did too. There was an interesting thread this week on Twitter about the proliferation of podcasts. And there's a lot of folks in here that have their own podcasts, have their own websites. I'm always very flattered when you guys come and enjoy our show as well. We're fortunate as a fan base. Now, I say that not being in any other fan base, so I should probably do the same thing I just asked Ren about. Like, he had a really interesting stat about 83 of 90 players turned over since 2013. That's a pretty massive number. My math side tells me, okay, well, 2013 to 2017, that's not a trivial amount of time. I wonder how that compares to other bottom two teams of other divisions across the NFL. Is that an average turnover ratio? Is it 10% off? What is it? But I also don't know what the ecosystem is like in Dallas or the ecosystem is like in Kansas City with podcasts versus sort of terrestrial terrestrial radio, traditional outlets, conventional journalism, et cetera, et cetera. I just know that when I started doing this a long-ass time ago, there wasn't a lot going on, and there certainly wasn't any goddamn passion about it. And that's something that I think is really good to see because, listen, for the first 6 or 7 years of us doing it, the organization didn't give two shits about us. In fact, they kept us at arm's distance for good reason. And in many ways, they keep us at arm's distance now because we're not beholden to anyone. We're fan-focused. We always have been. You guys know that. But what's nice is people are getting out there. They're doing their stuff. Shit, the article that Ren put up the other day, the work he's putting out there is phenomenal, right? The articles that you guys are putting together is just absolutely tremendous. So, God damn it. Did I, Brent? Did you just pull out? No, that can't be true. That can't be true. This is before the iPhone, because my buddy Carl had an iPhone out in Seattle. I can't believe that that's true. So maybe it is. I don't know. If it is, I'm super old. Can another team still make him their head coach? So for Buck Sandwich question about Mike Smith, here's the thing. There are all sorts of rules about who can interview, when they can interview, all that sort of stuff, right? I've always said none of that matters, right? If you make here attractive enough, he won't want to go. Right. If let's say here you are, you're the defensive coordinator of a team. Let's say the Bucs do make the playoffs. They're an up and comer. They got a franchise quarterback. They've got this ridiculous offense. They got this phenomenal defense. Why? I've never understood this. As someone who coached, I'm an arrogant prick. I always think I can do things better than anyone. That's just, I know that's in my nature. I don't think it's an attractive trait, but I know it about me. I always think, God damn it, did it launch in 2007? I must have been visiting Seattle when he had his iPhone. Son of a bitch, Brent, you just made me feel even older than I do. But my point is, even if I thought I wanted another crack at being a head coach, being a head coach can be a complete pain in the ass. If you can be the defensive coordinator and make those Super Bowl runs, listen, the ring is the thing. That's it. That's all. Right? So rather than perseverate about what his contract status is and who's looking for a head coach and all this other shit, just make Tampa the place everyone wants to be. That's the magic, right? That's the secret. Now, we already have some contractual advantages around state income tax. It's also not Florida. We have beaches. The women are gorgeous here. What the hell else you want? It's cheap to live. There's a bunch of upsides. But if all of a sudden you have a program like we had back in the day where every year you were a perennial contender, that's where people want to play. That's where great people want to play. That's not where Haynesworth guys want to play. Haynesworth guys want to go get the best contract, right? If you want people to want to come, you win. That's what the Patriots have done. Listen, Belichick is a brilliant coach. There's no doubt about it. He's a brilliant coach. But it helps that the Patriots are a championship mill. Everyone wants to go there. People will take less money to go there. They'll play different positions to go there, right? That's what you strive to build, and it's non-trivial to do that. So we got Mark Cook of PewterReport.com, a surprise second guest, calling in here about 9:35. I encourage you guys, if you have questions, to drop them here in the chat room. I'll do my best to address them. There was a lot of discussion with Pat Donovan about Jameis Winston, and listen, I was not a huge fan of drafting Jameis Winston, not because I was anti-Jameis, because I wasn't. I didn't want us to suck for Jameis. I didn't want to make sure we got the first pick. I wasn't one of those guys that thought Jameis would be a transcendental. Well, I kind of stuttered through that word. Transcendental is the word, and it's not that hard. But I wasn't one of those guys who felt he would be a transcendental athlete. He is. Make no mistake about it. Now, not that anyone gives a shit what I say or the platform that I say it from necessarily, but there are a few things that I will stake everything on. And one is that Jameis Winston is a transcendental athlete. He makes every single thing about an organization better. It's not close. I've been fortunate enough to be around him personally. I've been fortunate enough to be around him in a football sense. I've been fortunate to watch an immense amount of him playing at the NFL level. It is a unique thing that he does, guys. It absolutely is a unique thing that he does. We are fortunate as fans. I think it was Ren who said the golden age of Buccaneer fandom. I'm not ready to jump at that level yet, but damn it, it's getting close. It certainly feels that way, right? And it does. It starts with Jameis. It doesn't end with Jameis. And that's the great thing about great leaders. You can't be the start and the end. You just can't be. You have to be the start and the start. You have to get everyone better. You have to make your running game better. You have to make the offensive line. I watch those films. He's going around talking to the offensive line. He's one of those guys who always defers to the line for all the things that they did, right? Hell, he makes the defense better. Remember the old clips with Brooks and Sapp on the sideline and Lynch talking about Mike, cheering for Mike Alstott and cheering for Brad Johnson and those sorts of things. That's a team, gentlemen. That's a team. And we've got one. Now, that's just where you start, right? Rendak, sorry, the sidetrack because Ren has been on fire a little bit in here. And John, I can't wait. I'll edit the article tonight and get in here. We got a strange number. Good evening. This is What the Buck. Who do we have on the line, sir?
We're trying to sell subscriptions to the Tampa Tribune. We were wondering if anybody in your family may be interested.
Man, you sound suspiciously like Mark Cook, the editor-in-chief of PewterReport.com.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with him. I believe he used to work for us writing an outdoor column, but we fired him a long time ago.
Well, you're clearly more intelligent than the guys at PewterReport.com because they kept his ass. Welcome.
Yeah, well, they're desperate.
Welcome to the show, Mark. It was a different number, so I didn't recognize it. Everyone, we got Mark Cook, editor-in-chief of PewterReport.com, also known as the Ginger Badass. It's not Nuck Nuck. I know they sound a lot, but Nuck Nuck, I think, is doing some time at Orient Road. Is that correct?
Well, we got him out today. He's good. I mean, he's still got a hearing later next week, but right now we were able to bond him out. I had to pawn my mini bike, so he better not skip out because I had to use that for bond money.
Well, we all wish Nuck Nuck well, and you know, with OJ getting his parole today, I guess there's hope for everyone. I know that you've had a busy day, and I know that it's late.
I just want to let you know that Nuck Nuck is planning on helping OJ find the real killers now that OJ's out. So that's the game plan. So he told me he was going to go do that. So,
well, and I hear that Megyn Kelly's got an interview set up for him too. So that'll be good.
That'll be great.
Okay.
Fake news.
Exactly. Hashtag fake news. All right. So we just had Pat Donovan on, had a really good conversation with him. I know that you just did some time with some other local guys here as well. We got training camp coming up, which means I start giving a shit about football again, which is fun. What are you most excited about coming up on the 28th? Like, I mean, because the first day of training camp is always fun for me because I'm over there at like 5 o'clock in the morning eating dry eggs, waiting for everyone to show up. And then you guys stroll in because you're cool and you have your own keys and all that shit. And you turn the lights on for me and make me feel like not an idiot. What are you excited about this year?
I want to send you a video that Cliff Welch took of me about 5 minutes before camp started last year on that first day. It looks like I'm heading to my own execution. I didn't realize he was filming me. And I'm like, you can literally see it in my face. I roll my head back. I'm rolling my eyes. My heads are in my hand. I'm like, oh, my God, here comes 30 straight days. And then I realized no one feels sorry for me. I'm getting paid to watch football. So suck it up, fat boy. So I did. But I literally will send you that video. But it tells you what I was excited about. But you know what? This is a different year. You know, there was some excitement last year, but there was a lot of unknown. Certainly, what is Jameis Winston going to do in his second year? What is Dirk Cutter going to do as a first-year head coach? How good is this defense going to be under first-year coordinator Mike Smith? I think we got a lot of those answers last year. And so now the excitement level for not just, you know, the fans, but even for the media covering this football team. Because let's face it, it's more exciting to cover a winning football team. I mean, you know, the team gets more national press. I mean, some of us get more national press in a sense. So it's good for everybody. I think the thing that I'm most excited about is just watching this offense, you know, develop some chemistry and see how they use the new pieces to the puzzle, meaning O.J. Howard and Chris Godwin. And, of course, you know, there's a million little cliff notes that we could talk about, the offensive line and J.R. Sweezy and Marpet at center and all of those things. You know, what's Doug Martin going to do? How's he going to respond after missing the first three games? A million storylines in this. And on top of that, having the HBO crew around there brings a little bit more juice and excitement, too. So there's a lot of things to be excited about, not just for the fans, but even the people who cover the football team.
You know, you've covered the team for as long as I can remember. What season, if there is one, does this compare to? Is there one that you can say, oh, yeah, this feels a little bit like, you know, back in '07 or whatever, because I always think you talk like that because you sit on the front porch in a rocking chair. But is there a season you can compare this to?
Yeah, no. As far as covering it full-time for Pewter Report, I started in 2011, and there hasn't been anything anywhere remotely close to that. You know, I started the year after the 10-6 season. I guess there was some excitement going into that year, but remember that year was shortened or delayed a little bit by the player strike.
Right.
They negotiated the CBA, so that kind of threw things off a little bit. And I say it was shortened. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe they got a deal done right at the beginning, but there was some uncertainty heading into that season. And then things started off well, 4-2. Then, of course, we know that the big, you know, or whatever it was, I can't remember what it was. But, yeah, they're 4-2, and they ended up losing, you know, 10 straight. And Raheem got fired. There hasn't been any in the time that I fully covered the Bucks. Now, I remember I started covering the team back in 95, originally for WPLA or WFNS, the first sports station in town. And so I was there Sam's first year in 95, there for Tony's year. Now, again, I wasn't, you know, full time on the beat, but I was at all the games and would occasionally go to the old One Buccaneer. But I would say that 96 heading into that 97 season, because we remember the Buccaneers showed drastic improvement in the second half of the 96 season with Tony Dungy.
Yep.
Mainly we saw the defense come together, very similar to what we saw during that stretch last year after the bye week.
Absolutely.
To me, there's a lot of things that point in that direction. The difference is in 97, they didn't have the weapons offensively. I mean, there was work done in Mike Allstott, but again, at that point, you know, it was still Trent Dilfer, and it was Mike Shula at the helm of the offensive as the offensive coordinator. So this year is similar as far as the defenses, you know, the defense comparisons go. But there's, to me, even more excitement because there's more expectations on this offense over what they've been able to do the last couple years. But now adding additional weapons with Deshaun, OJ, you know, Chris Godwin, for that matter, and hopefully a renewed and reinvigorated Doug Martin after that third game.
Now, with all of this firepower that, and it's in the chat room, people are talking about this most talented team on paper we've seen, which is probably true. I think it's anecdotally, it feels true.
It's very true.
Is there any concern, and this is going to sound super stupid, but you're going to understand what I'm asking you because you're really smart, that there's too much talent? That there's just too much there?
Derek, it's funny. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about us last year at this time before the camp started. And in all honesty, I remember numerous times during your podcast saying, hey, there's only one ball to go around. I mean, you got Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson and there's, you know, Austin Seferian Jenkins and Charles Sims. And so, you know, at that point, so and we saw what happened by, you know, by the time you get into the fourth or fifth week of the season, there's guys on injured reserve. Vincent's done. Austin's been cut. You know, Doug Martin's hurt. They're signing people off the street. So, you know, no, there's no such thing as having too much talent, I don't believe, because there's going to be injuries at some point somewhere. You just hope they're not at key positions, and you hope there's not a crazy rash of injuries like they had at the running back position, where they're literally signing guys off the street that were starting the following week. Antone Smith, we remember him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Jacquez, week one, was not in a camp anywhere or with a team anywhere. So I don't know that there could be too much. I like the fact that they stockpiled it. You know what? The worst case scenario is Adam Humphries or a Chris Godwin, you know, halfway through the season saying, man, you know, the storyline being, I want more touches. I need more, you know, catches or, you know, or Cameron Brait saying, you know, hey, I want more catch. Again, I don't think those things happen. And I don't think they would be necessarily a disruptive thing, but you see what I'm saying? That means, this offense is clicking and there's some talented guys, not on this, on the football field, guys that would certainly be starting last year and playing a prominent role, are going to be reserves this year. And if they stay relatively healthy.
And, you know, we're talking to Mark Cook from PewReport.com here. And the question is, we've just dovetailed off of, is there too much talent? And Mark just brought up one of the real potential pitfalls, which is dissatisfaction with individual opportunity, which sometimes happen when a team isn't cohesive. What are your thoughts about the leadership on this team, either it, you know, whether they wear a hat or a helmet, right? And how that's going to make the culture of this team either conquer that potential problem, snuff it out before it starts, or is it a real potential cancer?
Well, I don't want to get into, you know, turn into a conspiracy guy or whatever you want to call me right off the bat before the season starts. It's certainly, you know, it's always a potential, but again, it's not the worst problem in the world to have. And I will say this from a leadership point. Let's bring that up first since you mentioned that first. In a helmet, we know what Jameis Winston is going to do. We know how he's going to do things. Jameis is going to distribute the ball, but he's going to do what's best. I mean, he's not going to play favorites. If O.J. Howard is not open when they're running two tight end sets and Cameron Brate is, he's going to throw the ball to 84. You have to.
Right.
And I'll say this also. Dirk Cutter's a no-nonsense guy. He's not going to bullshit these guys. And I don't think he's going to put up with, you know, guys being a pain in the ass. I mean, he'll tell them, hey, if you don't shut up, you know, it's a joke. I always tell Daisy all the time. I say, you know, look, Louis Grizzard had a great saying. When the bill collectors would call him, he would say, I put all the bills in the hat and I pull them out one by one until I run out of money. If you call me again next week or next month, you're not even going in the hat. You see what I'm saying? So Dirk Cutter is going to be like, hey,
yep.
You're complaining about getting, you know, five targets. If you don't shut up, you might get zero targets next month or next week. And so, I don't think that's a major issue or a major problem, to be honest with you. I think there's enough leadership on the field and on the sideline. And listen, these guys, there's not a Keyshawn Johnson on this football team. And I love Keyshawn and what he did for this organization. He helped them win a Super Bowl. I don't know they do without the guy. Okay. But there's not that kind of cancer, in my opinion, on this football team as of right now. And so I don't really see a whole lot of potential for that happening just because Jason and Dirk and his front office staff, they brought in, I think, the right guys. And that's an important part of things too, how that locker room's going to be. And I think they've got a pretty good group in here right now. And I think they all have, one goal. That's to get to the playoffs and see how far they can go. And hopefully players will be unselfish. And if it's working, look, if Jacquez Rogers starts the season off with 300-yard games, I'm not starting Doug Martin week four. I mean, why? I mean, if this team is 2-1 or 3-0 at that point, screw that. You know, I don't care what you did 2 years ago. I don't care what you did in 2012. You made yourself unavailable by your own actions. And we've got a guy that's producing. Why would you want to disrupt things? So I think that factors into it as well.
Well, it's certainly that running back position is certainly going to be a topic of conversation for sure, regardless of how it turns out, right? If Jacquez goes out there and balls
right.
out,
sure.
Or if he goes out there and stumbles, it doesn't matter. It's going to be something that people are going to pick at regardless. I think in today's NFL, the days of the James Wilder, 40 carries in a game are over. You're
right,
going to have to
right.
have someone that spells someone, and if you've got Jacquez, who's the hot hand, you ride the hot hand. You now spell him with 22 comes back. He shows some pop, and then you adjust. You're a cook, right? You're just adjusting your recipe. Do I back off on the cayenne and increase the chipotle or whatever the hell you do? I don't know. I'm not a real cook, but coming into training camp, what is the one thing you would say you're looking at with the most scrutiny?
This might sound crazy, but I want to see what Jameis does year three. I think this is
that sounds crazy,
this is crucial
Mark.
To the well. I mean,
I'm just kidding.
And maybe it sounds too easy to say.
No, it doesn't.
Or maybe people think people might be thinking, "What are you crazy?" I mean, the guys look great his first 2 years. He's got flaws in his game. We know that. I mean, all quarterbacks do. Tom Brady looked like garbage the first half of that Super Bowl. What does Jameis do to be better in year three? The talent's there. If they stay healthy, there's no excuses. And again, I'm a big Jameis fan. We all know that. I think he's the best quarterback this franchise has had after only two seasons. So I'm a big fan, obviously. But you win Super Bowls with quarterbacks, and again, people are going to say, well, no, you win with defense. And and there's some truth to that. But what was the score in that game last year in the Super Bowl? I mean, wasn't it like 85-79? I mean, it was a track meet as much as anything.
The answer is you win on the scoreboard. Is the answer, right?
You win on the scoreboard.
That's the only place.
And having a great quarterback certainly helps you. Certainly helps you on the scoreboard. So my point is, Jameis Winston is going to carry this team to a Super Bowl title, be in the playoff run for years to come if he makes that next step. Very good quarterback, excellent for a rookie, good for a second year guy. How good is it going to be his third season? That's going to go a long way in determining the future of this team for the next 5 or 10 years.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't think it was a cop-out answer. I think it's hard, and you and I have talked about it ad nauseum, that it's tough to rate Jameis at training camp and in practice because he really does, and I know you guys who listen to the podcast for years and have heard Mark and I talk about this, you're sick to death of it. This is a guy who tinkers at practice. He's testing himself. He's trying new things.
Yeah.
We don't get to see the Jameis that we see on Sunday or on Thursday night or on Monday night, whatever it is, at training camp. we see the one who's in the lab. He's trying to hone his craft. So it's going to be hard, Mark. I think it's a really tough task, and it's going to be interesting to see how you cover it this year on PeterReport.com. And as a transition, because I'm trying to get better at this thing that I do as a hobby, where can people catch you? I know you got a live event coming up at Ford's Garage. You guys are constantly putting out great content on the website. You've got the Pewter Nation podcast. What else can people do to follow you and the folks over at PewterReport.com?
Well, number one, we want them to go to the website. I mean, that's the bread and butter. I mean, they can follow us on Twitter, and we've got 26,000 Twitter followers. But the bottom line is going to the website helps us pay the bills. And so we certainly would love people to go to PewterReport.com, not just once, but multiple times a day. Tomorrow, Scott's got a training camp preview, Fab Five. Our most popular article every single Friday or every single week is the Fab. He's got a tremendous one coming out tomorrow. It'll be up. We do have some events coming up next Tuesday night out at Ford's Garage. Keith Tandy is going to be there, and Ford's Garage has created Keith's favorite burger, the Tandy Man canned burger. It's a Angus burger, lettuce, tomato, pickles, onions, but with some Boom Boom shrimp on top of it. Keith loves a po' boy, loves the Boom Boom shrimp type thing, so we've created a burger specifically for him. We're also going to be doing a pewter punch, which will be sold for $3.70 because Keith's number is 37. And 10% of the proceeds from the restaurant sales that night will go to Keith Tandy's charity of his choice. We'll have an announcement on that hopefully tomorrow. That's next Tuesday. And then the following Friday, the night of the first camp, go to camp that morning, go home, take a nap, then come out to Pin Chasers. Martin Gramatica will be out there. We'll be supporting his charity foundation. And, you know, people could come out for $15, bowl for 2 hours, come hang out with Martin. We'll do a little Q&A with him, talk about the Super Bowl season. Everybody still loves to talk about that. Martino autograph, take pictures, things like that. So we hope people will come out and support that event as well. Again, we've always told you how much we respect and admire what you guys do there. You know, you guys have quite a volunteer team of people who bust their butts year-round, you know, the Ryan Winfreys and the Cheryl Stewarts and you know, and Shawnee. I mean, all of these people, and I shouldn't have mentioned anybody because I forget people, but you know who you are. And we certainly look up and respect what you guys do. And so we've kind of taken it upon ourselves to try and chip in a little bit. We can't do it in the capacity that you do, but we try and support what you guys do. But we appreciate the support you guys also give us in our endeavors. And again, it's taken a big page out of the book of what you guys do.
Well, appreciate the kind words. Appreciate all that you guys do, both from the website all the way through the community stuff. And certainly those events are going to be a lot of fun. The Ford's Garage event sounds fun. The po' boy thing sounds tasty. And the punch doesn't sound bad either. Martin's always a good guy to hang out with. PewterReport.com, at MarkCook1970. If you want to follow Mark Cook directly on Twitter, at PewterReport on Twitter. And one thing I do want to say is all you mainstream big swinging dicks got real pumped up when you started getting followers. I remember back when I had the most Twitter followers, because that was not that long ago, you bastards. But congratulations on passing me. And thank you, by the way, for the retweeting of the school spot drive. That's really been helpful. Sure. I really do appreciate that, Mark. So make sure you tell Scott that I said thank you as well, brother.
Yeah, no, that one's big. You know, as most people know, we adopted our son out of foster care in Hillsborough County. I see the need. I was exposed to it. You know, my son showed up at my house literally with a Glad bag full of his possessions. So make no mistake, there are needy kids out there. And for $10, what you guys are doing is amazing. And there's no excuses. I mean, again, skip your stupid Starbucks tomorrow or a couple of days. Don't buy that pack of cigarettes. Leave that can of Coke in it. Well, never mind. I'm going to buy my Coke in it again. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
find $10. We can all find $10 and donate that. And you guys will get to your goal very quickly if everybody would just chip in and throw $10. Again, you know, you can't help everybody. But if, you know, if you can help one person, your $10 is doing that.
You help them one at a time, right? You can't boil the ocean. Right. You just boil it one cup at a time. Right. So we had an interesting thing. I'll tell you before you go. And Brent, I'll drop you the link is right here on the website. Brent, if you go to that article, you'll see the current count and you'll be able to click on the donation button as well. I appreciate you asking. Mousetrap Escape Room in Ybor City. Jennifer Needle and her husband run this escape room and great people. I met them just through happenstance, became friendly with them, started chatting. They donated some money to the golf tournament. She got really emotional about this one, donated some of her own funds, a non-trivial amount, probably a whole classroom worth. And then she went out there and challenged her other corporate friends, like the travel group, right, or the limo company she does. She's like, hey, I did this, will you match it, right? And then she did a thing where she sponsored, hey, at $10 from everyone who books an escape room. There was some really creative stuff going on. And I think that as we get better at this in the community, as we collaborate like you guys are doing and learn from each other, you know, we had a person say they were going to send stuff down from Houston, a Texans fan who knows us through PFUFA. And Cheryl said what we've always said about peanut butter and the other stuff. Don't do that. There's kids who don't have school supplies in Houston. Mm-hmm. Give it there. Our goal isn't to set a record or do anything. We're not trying to pat ourselves on the back. We're just helping our community. If you want to help, help there. You know. So anyway, we really appreciate you guys coming on board and all you're doing. Be safe. Get some sleep. Yeah. I know today was a long day, and I can't wait to see you at training camp, my friend.
All right, man. We'll see you soon, and be safe in your travels next week as well, buddy.
Yes, sir. Best to Daisy, man.
Will do, man. Thanks.
Yes, sir. All right, Mark Cook of PewterReport.com fame coming in here. I saw Nuck Nuck was in the chat room. It's always good to see Nuck Nuck, and I'm glad that he's got what he needs. Let's dive in a little bit. We're at 10 o'clock because we had two guests, but I still want some. I want to do some more Buccaneers talking. You guys seem like you're having a good time, and I know I am, for the first time in a long time talking about damn football. And the transition I want to go into, I was going to go into offense and then walk through the offense and then defense and then walk through the defense and all this other shit. But I really want to take these two articles I have. Got John Hinkle's article, A Closer Look at the NFC South, and then NFC South Training Camp Preview, Key Issues and Players to Watch by Kevin Patra, who I follow now. Both excellent articles, right? If you haven't read both of these, go do that, right? John's is on our site. The other one's on NFL.com. Look up Kevin Patra. What's funny is they cover similar things. I think John's is actually more detailed, but they come up to similar conclusions, right? So you've got teams, like you look at the Panthers, and there's a reason why I'm doing this, guys, and you guys know that I don't put a whole lot of weight on predicting things before we see training camp, before we see preseason, and there's injuries and all this other shit that can happen to change things, right? But the moral of this, hey, John, grab the link to your article and drop it in the chat room, will you, brother? I can't do that while I'm doing this conversation. There's too much going on, but if you could drop it in there, that way they'll see it. If you find the other one, that's cool, but I don't care. Yours, actually, I think was better, even though I like Kevin Patra's. So the Panthers went out and they got some folks. They got the Christian McCaffreys of the world, the Matt Khalils, the Julius Peppers, who God knows how this guy's still playing, but he still does it at a high level. But they lost a lot of stuff too. And Calvin Benjamin weighs as much as John and I combined. And you know, then the GM's gone. And it Carolina just doesn't feel like it's a healthy organization right now. Now, they could come out and ball their ass off, or Cam Newton could come out and just carry the team to 12 wins, because Cam Newton is a badass, guys. You can make fun of him. You can hate him all you want. That son of a bitch can will a team to win, right? But if you look at it right now, they just don't look like they're that impressive, right? John's got them going 8-8. I think that's probably about where they seem mediocre. They're milquetoast from what we can see. Now, again, you could have Christian McCaffrey come out and be the next great thing, right? He could be the best carrier of the football forever. But Riverboat Ron may be in some deep shit. So then we move over to the New Orleans Saints. And the reason I'm doing this is because the first goal, right, the thing you're doing, if you're looking at the whiteboard of the season, thank you, Nuck Nuck, that's good loving. John, he got it for you. The whiteboard of the season is win your division, right? You don't care about a number of wins, because you win games one at a time. It's always one. It starts with one. By the way, I think that's a Linkin Park reference, and obviously RIP to the gentleman today that killed himself, because that's never good. And I make fun of Linkin Park, but I don't make fun of him because I don't like him, because we've all listened to Linkin Park. But anyway, I digress. New Orleans. New Orleans is one of those teams that's sort of been a bane to our existence, because offensively they've always had firepower. But to be honest, Chester, thank you very much, Brent. Appreciate it. But when you look at New Orleans, the power of New Orleans continues to age, and that is Drew Brees. They went out and got a running back in Adrian Peterson, who could come in and be the health-defying wonder man that he has been in the past, because the guy is a uniquely talented individual for sure. But it's not like he's running behind the greatest offensive line in football. The Saints lost firepower on the outside. Their defense is just hot garbage. What is it that people are expecting out of the Saints? Now, John's got them going a little bit better at 9-7. I don't know that that's true. I was in the Superdome when they were booing Drew Brees because we were beating him. That fan base is one losing streak away from screaming for Luke McCown. That's probably not true. I don't know their depth chart, but he was on there for a while, and I like Luke. He's a good guy. Then we move to the Atlanta Falcons. Listen, they're not going to let that blow up in the Super Bowl kill them. They're just not. They're too good a team. They're led too well. There's too much talent. If you're a Falcons fan right now, you're probably on the edge of a cliff somewhere, but you know what? You'll get over it. You got to the mountaintop. You fucked up. You'll try and get back there again. You got Matt Ryan, but you've got a defense in complete and utter disarray. You've got an offense with a new coordinator. That defense was kicked in the balls by Tom Brady and Bill Belichick repeatedly on that comeback. But at the same time, Matt Ryan did nothing to help them. To think that the Atlanta Falcons are going to waltz through the NFC South when they couldn't do it last year when they were better is just stupid. When you look at teams and whether they have improved, and Ren in the chat room talks about the new DC, which we talked about, and then the OC and taking Ryan time to adjust. I'm not sure how different Sark is going to be, you know, from Kyle. I'm not sure that if they're smart. I mean, they put a lot of points on the board last year. It was a historical offense. I wouldn't dick with much. I sure as hell would be studying that playbook. But they didn't get better, right? So let's recap. Did the Panthers get better, fundamentally better? Do they feel like a team on the rise? No. Did the Saints get better, fundamentally better? Do they feel like a team on the rise? No, they feel like an aging team who's struggling to stay relevant. Did the Falcons get better? No, they did a great job last year. They struggled through. There was a nice little battle at the end with us. They made it through the playoffs. They had the Super Bowl ring in their grasp, and then they choked. And they didn't get better. What about the Bucs, though? Did our Buccaneers get better this offseason? If there is a single analyst who can say that the Buccaneers on paper, and I know that this is all on paper, but if there's a single analyst worth their salt who can say that this Buccaneers team did not get significantly better, then they are fucking crazy. It's that easy. If they had only done one or two of the things that they did, if they had only gotten, say, two pieces of firepower on offense, but when you add DeSean Jackson and O.J. Howard, when you bring a J.R. Sweezy in, guys, you just made your offensive line much better. You just made defenses, as Pat Donovan said, and as I had talked about before, not be able to stuff eight guys in the box. You've changed the dynamic. Fundamentally on offense. You've improved your firepower. You've given your firepower more time to do the things that they do. You've given your coach and your coordinator more flexibility with their play calling and game planning. This offense got absolutely significantly better in this offseason, and that's without even talking about Chris Godwin or about Cam Brate or about Adam Humphries or about whoever the fuck runs the ball. Because to be honest, a healthy Doug Martin is a damn good running back. Jacquizz Rodgers proved he can be a damn good running back. And by the way, the Jacquizz Rodgers thing, I want to point out, this goes straight in the face of these idiots who say, oh, I don't want someone else's trash when they're referring to free agency. Listen, if you're that guy, pull your head out of your fucking ass and realize that's not how free agency works. You cannot just look at what someone does on team one and assume that's what they'll do on team two. You can't. There are too many proof points that that's not true. Defensive side of the ball, again. Baker. Healthy Ayers. Healthy Spence. Healthy Smith. Quan Alexander, who looks like he's trying to destroy the game of football. Lavonte David, who I've said all night, how could it be so good that we're not talking about Lavonte David? And then you got Brent Grimes, who balled his ass off. The only thing you can have any concern of in my mind is the safety position, and they went out and they shored that up. Now, we don't know what it's going to look like. But Jesus Christ, everything else got better. Fundamentally. Fundamentally. Both sides of the ball got better. Our punter was already a badass, guys. The only thing you can worry about, and it's so funny because in Kevin's article, that's what he referred to, the kicker battle. You know how you get around that problem? You don't make games come down to three fucking points. That's how you get around that problem. And that's about all I got to say about that. So if all of that plays out and the Bucks take care of business, and let's just say they do it the best possible way, and they stack those six up against those other three teams, right? Ain't going to win a whole lot more to win the division. And then you're stamping your ticket. You get your ticket to the to the playoffs, and that's all you got to do. This is exciting, guys. It is. You guys know I'm not a guy who gets into that sort of overexcited stuff. I just don't do that. And it's all complete conjecture, guys. It's all on paper. Night, Chris. It's good to have you, brother. But as a Bucks fan, it's pretty damn exciting. So I'm going to transition a little bit to training camp and talk a little bit more. Knock, knock. You should go try out. Don't stab folk, though. That's definitely frowned upon. Stabbing guys, you know, in ice skating, you can hit people with sticks. But even there, they don't let you stab people. What the hell just happened? Oh, my screen went off. Going to give my thoughts on O-line continuity. Yeah, sure. I'd love to, Oversell. What's up, Derek? I think O-line continuity is preferred but not required. If you can have the same set of five guys together for a long time, it makes you better. Because you start to, it's like anything else, right? Whether you're talking about quarterbacks and receivers pairing, you start to know more about how people play. And so that makes things better, especially when you're team blocking, when you're zone blocking. You have a real strong instinct about what people are going to do. You know what people's tendencies are. You know where they're strong and where they're weak, right? So you've heard me talk about offensive line for years as dance, right? It's fat guy choreography is what it is. And so you're always going to be better if you practice dancing together. So I would love to have that continuity. So I think that that's one of the reasons why some of us, including myself, was a little bit nervous about moving Allie over to center, because he was doing really well at guard. But when I started looking at this, it's not that I don't think Allie can be a really exceptional center. I think he's got all the tools to do that. I think it was an opportunity for them to do what they wanted to do anyway, which was get a better – you want your best five guys there, right? And then you want to establish continuity. You don't want continuity with mediocrity. Right. So by being able to get Sweezy in, flip Pample, all of a sudden you shore up Donovan Smith because you got Sweezy next to him. You got another experience with Smith as well. You got Pample over here next to Dotson. Now, I don't think that he shores up Dotson. I think DeMar's got to step up. If I had one person that I'm concerned about, it's DeMar Dotson. And not because I don't think he can play the game at a high level. I think he can. That's why he got the contract. He's just got to do it. Right. So would I prefer to have continuity 3, 4, 5 years of our guys playing together? Absolutely. Back in the heyday of the Eagles with Runyon and those guys, that'd be great. I thought Sweezy was going to left side. I may have it wrong. Brett, you might be right. If Pample stays on the left, I you know what's funny is Sweezy was a right guard in Seattle. You're probably right. I have it backwards. And the video that I tweeted out and put in the YouTube video has him on the right guard. You're probably right. So Pample will be on the left hand side. Next to Smith. You know, in my mind, I like Sweezy next to Smith, but if he's a right guard, then that's not going to help. Though he'll help Dotson. He's going to help whoever he's next to for sure. So, sorry for the misspeak. That's a good catch, Brent, and good correction, Ren. The video that I just alluded to was in I tweeted out earlier this week because I did a little quick Periscope, and then I put it up on YouTube as well, which I'm going to be trying to do a little bit more of this year. It was Tom Cable going over J.R. Sweezy from Seattle. If you have not seen that, you need to go watch it. It's and I use this phrase before with, funnily enough, Shiano coaching videos, because Shiano coaching in college, to be honest, the guy knows a lot of football. I just think he did a shit job here. But it's football porn, watching what Sweezy does, right? And he'll spread that attitude, right? He's going to make all of these guys better. So let's talk more about the offense. We just talked about the offensive line. I think everyone understands DeSean Jackson changes the game. Having a guy that can take the top off changes what a defense has to do. The first time we complete a nine to DeSean Jackson, he takes it to the house, everyone's defensive game plan against the Buccaneers change. Right? At first, they're going to doubt that Jameis can deliver the ball. That's going to be the first thing. They're going to challenge Jameis to make that throw. He has to be able to make that throw. And when I get to Jameis, it's one of the things I'll talk about, right? But DeSean Jackson fundamentally changes the game. Now, if they start playing soft on him, they play 10 yards off the ball, then all of a sudden you go bubble and you let him work in space. And that's where our other receivers have to do the dirty work. Mike Evans will do the dirty work. He'll block. Adam Humphries will block. I'm assuming Chris Godwin, out of a good program, is going to be able to block. To Brent's comment in the chat room, is absolutely right. And Pat Donovan from earlier call mentioned it as well. When you have guys that can do that, right, can stretch the field or can get open quickly, you help everybody, including your offensive line. Now, what's funny is I always want my offensive line to hold their blocks as long as they can hold their blocks. I hate guys that play on a clock, because when you play on a clock, you're screwed, especially with a guy like Jameis who will extend plays, which is also another way that he's similar to Brett Favre. I don't think there's similarities there with Eli, but I don't watch enough Eli to know if that's consistent. Running back position, we talked a little bit about before. It's going to be a point of contention regardless of how it goes. If Jacquizz Rodgers is doing great for the first 4 weeks, all we'll hear about is how we can't have Doug Martin. God help us if he gets in the game and gets tackled for a loss once, because then, Jesus Christ, you know what's going to happen. Here's the thing. You want the best guys you can have. I don't have an opinion on McNichols. He hasn't played a snap in the NFL, so I don't give a shit yet. It was a good draft. We'll see what he does. I know they like Peyton Barber. I know that we've got guys who can run the ball. Give guys the football. Ride the hot hand. It really is that simple, right? You're going to have plenty of carries to dole the ball out. You guys know for years, I'm simple. If we run the ball for 4 yards a run, you never throw a football. You don't get style points in the NFL. You just don't. It's a game about moving the ball down the field into the end zone. That's all it is. It's that simple. Ideally, stopping the other guys from doing it. He does help the run game. The passing game helps the run game because it makes the secondary be honest. It makes the linebackers be honest. It gives you space. Space allows extra yards. I would like to point out Mike Evans has talked about improving his run after catch, even though I got shit all last year for being the only guy who talks about that, being the only thing that differentiates Julio Jones from Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans is a beast. I love Mike Evans. I love everything he does on the field. I just wish a guy that big was better after the catch the way Julio is. Now, if you tell me I have to trade that level of tenacity or ferocity or whatever you want to call it for more injuries, I don't take the trade. Isaac Bruce your ass, Torrey Holt your ass under the ground, I don't care. Right, because I want you healthy. I want you catching for 1,500 yards. But Mike says he's working on it. Mike works hard. Mike is a physical beast. It'll be interesting to see what happens. These are all good things. That takes us to Jameis. And Mark alluded to it a little bit. You need continued evolution. We won't be able to tell in training camp. Guys, I'd like to tell you we could. I understand the ones on the sideline were no chance for Yak. Listen, every week we talked about Yak and Mike Evans. There are plenty of catches he makes where he goes to the ground not in the act of catching the ball. And it's not because I think he's afraid of contact. That's never been what this is about. It may be about just securing the football. And to be honest, like I said, if it's injury or secure the football or get 3 extra yards, fuck the last one, right? Now, if it's ball placement, then that's an area for Jameis to evolve, right? You got to get your playmakers the ball in a position where they can then go make additional plays. But I think when you look at Mike Evans' game, it's really the only place that he needed to improve or could improve. So when you have guys that are playing at a high level, you want them all evaluating their game critically and then trying to make the steps to take their game to the next level, whatever that next level is, you know? And for Mike, I think that's what it was. So for Jameis, I think to continue to get better about reading the defense, you know, he's evolved every year. I think he continues to do that. He is a student in the classroom, which is great. He watches his film. He gets that work in. But the deep ball is what's really going to have to come along. And seeing it in the OTAs, we're going to see a lot of that in training camp. That is something we will be able to see. He has got to try and outthrow DeSean Jackson, and that is not easy. You'd love for him to reduce turnovers, but I don't disagree with Pat Donovan. I think that he is a gunslinger. He is going to take the risks. And to be honest, I think they pay off a lot more than they don't. And I think that if I have to trade, I take him the way he is. I think that as he continues to read defenses better, he'll be put in less situations where he has to make those tough throws. So I think that that will inherently improve that condition. On the defensive side of the ball, Defense. Part of the game that makes me happy. Fundamentals. You don't miss tackles. You're an aggressive downhill defense. You take risks because you want turnovers. This is an aggressive defense. Mike Smith does not play passive defense. He does not play run to us. He plays run through you. The front seven has to play mean. They have to personify Robert Ayers' attitude, right? And they have to get out there and whip people's asses for every minute. They have to impose their will. That secondary, as a result, has to be opportunistic. When they have that chance to make the pick, they have to make it, right? That's the big change. That's the quick turn. Safety. We'll get to safety. And what's funny is I'd love to hear you guys talk safety. Because to be honest, safety doesn't bother me as much as it seems to bother everyone. We went out there, we drafted, agented. I'm not one of the guys who hates contact. That was funny. In Kevin's article, and John, I don't know if you read Kevin's article. You really should. Because I do, like I said, I do think your article is better, but I think that there are similarities between the two that are good, not in a bad way. Like it's not that there's any crossover. I think you guys wrote really uniquely different articles, but going after a very similar endpoint. But where's the article? Here we go. Where's the safety piece? Damn it! Smith's defense. I know we talked about it. Sorry, guys. I got to find it. Here we go. In the non-kicker realm, and this is from Kevin Patra's article, he's at KPatra on Twitter. In the non-kicker realm, the safety spot is one to watch. The Bucs signed J.J. Wilcox from Dallas and drafted Justin Evans in the second round. Keith Tandy made plays when inserted into the lineup last season, which could give him a track to the starting spot. Then there's Chris Conte, whom the Bucs re-signed and fans love to hate. It's a great line. The fans do love to hate Chris Conte. He made some big plays down the stretch. I don't care who plays safety. I really don't. I just want them to do their job. Conte, Tandy, Wilcox, Evans, put them in a hat, shuffle them up like Yahtzee dice. I don't care. Right? Tandy got the job done when he was in there. I have every faith that Mike Smith and his team are going to put the best two dudes back there. Or one, depending on what set we're in, right? It's going to be fun to watch, though. And what's funny is all of the front seven work that's going on is going to make them better. It really is exciting. So from a players to watch perspective on defense, I guess I didn't do this on offense. So Brent says it really well. He feels the same way about safety as running. I think it's a good parallel, right? Whoever's hot, roll with them. It's great. And I don't think I follow Conte on Twitter, Nuck, so I'm not sure what you're referring to. But You can spell it out here and you can talk about it. I know people like to beat him up. I don't. I think when he's healthy, he plays pretty good football. But Gerald McCoy, will he finally shut up the critics? Will he do enough at big times in games for people to get off his nuts? Can Quan become what he wants to be and what he has said he's going to be and what he looks like he could grow into? Is there enough spotlight for Levante David? Will people even know what a great player this kid really is? It is really unique to have that much talent in the linebacking core, guys. It really is. And who's going to be one of those guys in the secondary? Is it going to be Hargraves? That's a great point from John, right? It's funny. Noah Smith. You mean Noah Spence, I'm assuming. Or you just made a hybrid. Did Jacquees and Noah end up doing some genetic work? What's going on over there, John? But those are two guys that hardly anyone was talking about. But Noah Spence and Jacquees Smith, again, when you look at what's going on with that front line, provide some really unique heat. So I'm excited, guys. I think for those of you who listen to the podcast and for those who listen afterwards here on the recordings, we'll realize this is when I start to get amped up. And to be honest, it's been a long time since I've been this excited about football. And I honestly can't remember since I was in Seattle. Right, because I lived in Seattle for about 6 or 7 years. I still follow the Bucks. I had my DirecTV. Oh, Jesus Christ, we don't even say a thing about Golston, who's a beast. Yes, he gets better. He gets better across the board. He was consistently getting better last year. Will Golston is underrated in every facet of the game. He can play three positions on the freaking line. You could argue all four, but I don't want him at zero. But he can play either end, and he can play three technique. And we've done this whole offseason and not said a goddamn word about the guy. Clinton McDonald. Who are the guys who are going to be the guys who make the difference? We've got a lot of depth. This is what a good team feels like, looks like, right? That's absolutely astonishing. So Ren says the run back depth is proven to be better than safety. It's not the same. There may not be a hot hand to ride at safety. So let's look at that. It's an interesting assertion. So I agree that Doug Martin is a good back when he's healthy, and we'll say that for now he's healthy, but he's not available. So let's say for the first four games, do you still stay by that? Jacquizz Rodgers, you're going to say that the body of work he put up last year is enough for us to believe that he's a top-tier running back. Peyton Barber, McNichols, draft choice. What makes you think that the running back depth is any better than J.J. Wilcox coming in and Conte and Tandy? Like, are you asserting that Conte's just bad? You fall into that camp, which is not, I'm not saying you're wrong, right? But I think that the parallels are pretty striking. I don't know that there's that significant, we don't have a rock star safety back there for sure, but we don't have a rock star running back unless you're in the camp that believes Doug Martin is a rock star from time to time. I like Jacquizz Rodgers, but he's not Adrian Peterson in his you know, heyday. Lots of people lose their starting jobs. It's a good point. Ren, if you want to call in, you can call in. It's a good point. I just don't think that it's as stark as you say, but the number is 813-964-7364. It's a good discussion. I'm happy to have it. Conte is as inconsistent as his health allows, in my opinion. Safety also doesn't touch the ball as often as running back, right? It's not as integral a position. Safety is your last line of defense most of the time. Now, there's some arguments when you move your safety up and they play in the run game, for sure. Devontae Bond was. He didn't look good in OTAs to me. I think that's one of those things where they're going to have to figure out who the hell is going to be that strong side. So I think the safety discussion is a good one, right? I think that Brent's point was a good one as well. Safety is going to be one of those positions that we're going to have to see how it matures, because it's also about scheme, right? Did the safety position seem like it got better towards the end of the year because they started understanding what was going on, or because the front seven started performing better? How much of it was lack of ability, lack of knowledge, lack of health? I don't know. I'm not sure, Ren, and maybe you do. And that's not I'm not being a dick. I'm just, maybe you paid more attention to it than I did. But anecdotally, I don't think it was obvious what the problem was, and I certainly don't think it's as obvious as Chris Conte is bad at football, right? I think that is an absolute horseshit approach, and I don't think that's what it is. But I think that as we wrap up the show, and I know that that John's got an article that I'll edit tonight. I'll make sure that goes out in the morning as well. I want to remind folks that I will not be at training camp the 28th and 29th. So if you're out there, be our eyes and ears. If you're coming out to training camp, tweet at us, let us know. Like I said, I'm easy to spot. Normally, I'm down to go grab lunch after training camp. If you guys want to go grab a bite to eat, it's my favorite time of the year in many ways. So if you guys are coming out there, let us know, and we'll try and get together afterwards. I usually pay a tremendous amount of attention to Twitter while I'm out there when I'm not watching drills. So it's pretty easy to get a hold of me if you just tweet at me, at WhatTheBuck. Again, last sort of ditch effort on the plugging of the school supply drive. I dropped the link in this forum. I know a lot of you have already participated, and I thank you. If you have a social media following and you feel like you can share it, we'd appreciate it. The goal was to get 600 backpacks filled, $10 a backpack. That's $6,000. We were just over $3,500 as of 6 o'clock p.m. tonight Eastern time. My job tomorrow is to take the box truck that we got and go pick up supplies from Staples that we're buying with the money, get it all over to Cheryl. Our team is assembling all those backpacks on Sunday, delivering them over the next 2 weeks before August 10th when school starts. It is a Herculean amount of effort, and it would never happen without you guys donating and participating, without our team doing the work, without the amazing partners we have across Steps, the Weston, Barto Ford, I mean, all these guys who've done, DeBartolo Foundation. Good Lord, you know, and our team, the What the Buck Really Matters team. So it's pretty phenomenal. So thank you guys for putting up with the off season. I know that I don't put out as much content as I used to, so I appreciate that you're still with us. This year, the plan is to do the one show a week. We're also going to try and augment with, we did a little poll, Periscope, Facebook, or YouTube. Periscope, Facebook, and YouTube came out almost equal, so the poll did us no good whatsoever. From an ease of execution perspective, I think I'm going to do Periscope videos, and then I'll export them into YouTube and then repost them everywhere. So the content will get out there, but it will be live streamed. We'll use that as a genericized word, live streamed via Periscope. So if you follow us on Twitter, you'll get a notification. Periscope will be the platform, and then we'll put it up on our YouTube channel, and then that'll be used to populate all the other channels. So that's the plan. That's the goal. That's the hope. Tailgate is on. Going to be bigger, better, badder, all those sorts of things. We'd love to have you at the tailgate. Follow us. We've got an Instagram. We don't do shit with it, but you guys are welcome to follow us. Make sure you let our writers know that you like their stuff. If you do, interact with them. Big shout out to John and all the guys that have been doing all the work in the offseason. Looking forward to seeing more out of Ren, because I know he's been doing some great stuff everywhere else, you know, on other platforms. So we got an article coming up from him too, which is going to be great. He does really good in-depth stuff. If you've not read those, you need to get out there and do that. And JC De La Torre and all those guys. So it's going to be a great year. Thanks for all of your support. If you've got feedback, comments, hit us up at questions at whatthebuck.net, and we'll do our best to do it. And if you have things you want covered on the show, let us know that as well. If nothing else, I will not be doing a show next week from D.C., I don't think, but who knows? Maybe I'll get a hair across my ass and do something crazy. And Brent says that Ren's the best co-host ever, which is great. You guys do a great job over there, of course. But I will be back on the 30th, bigger, badder, and sweatier than ever out at One Buck Place. So until next time, I will tell you guys, thank you very much for joining, and go Buccaneers.